All right, we are back. Another episode of Lions Collective. This time on Thursday, due to some scheduling conflicts, but we are back. Appreciate all you, the constant support. We're on our way to 3,000 subscribers here on the YouTube channel, so it was massive.
Oh,
we're here to recap the massive Monday night primetime win over the Ravens. We'll get into that. A lot of things to take away from that. Later in the show, of course, we'll get Lions-Browns picks. We'll preview that game. But, fellas, I mean, the Lions are coming off a massive Monday night game. A couple of you guys were out there in Baltimore. I know the graphic keeps trending the last couple of days of basically every single national outlet picking the Ravens by. It was a close game, but still picking the Ravens. Lions go in there, and the final score did not tell the full story of that football game, especially because of some of the plays that happened. I mean, they probably should have won that game by two scores. It just kind of happened the way it happened. Lions dominated on the road, and I think it's safe to say that Bears win. If people want to say, well, it's the Bears, and they scored 50 against the Bears, they scored 40 against the Ravens. So I don't know what those people are going to say at this point, but how are we feeling now a couple days removed from that massive win for the Lions here?
There's always going to be goalpost movers. You know that, Jeff.
That's just the nature of the business. BK didn't play. Van Noy didn't play. Do it against a real defense like the Browns. That's exactly
I'm learning this as I throw it.
Van Noy didn't play. Like, look, Kyle Van Noy's turned into a really, really good NFL player, but I don't think that was the difference. The Lions won this game in the trenches, and that's exactly where you want to win a football game against another Super Bowl contender. And they did it on both sides of the ball, and the numbers are just crazy. You know, it's the second most rushing yards the Ravens have ever given up in their franchise history in regulation. It was the third fewest yards the Ravens have had rushing in a Lamar Jackson start, and the seven sacks. That's been the talk all offseason, regular season. Can this team pressure the quarterback? They pressured the most difficult quarterback to pressure and to bring down. And it just was so thoroughly impressive on both sides of the ball, what they were able to do, not just to the Ravens, but to do to the Ravens in their house.
Yeah, not only did they pressure Lamar, they brought him down. I think that was the most impressive part, the corralling of Lamar Jackson. And whether it was by a shoestring or you actually wrapped him up and took it to the ground, it didn't matter. As long as you could get him on the ground, that was huge to do that against a quarterback like Lamar, as elusive as he is. There's a lot made of, are they going to spy? Are they going to put someone back there to watch Lamar? And they did a lot of that. And hey, it turns out that works sometimes. Kelvin Shepard talked about that a little bit this morning. But to see that defensive performance against Lamar Jackson, and Shep said, I'm kind of losing sleep, trying to figure out how to stop this guy. And his defense brought him to the ground seven times. That is the most sacks Lamar Jackson has taken in a game. I thought that was huge. You go on the other side of the ball, you see 224 rushing yards with David Montgomery getting the large chunk of that with 151. You talk to players and coaches after the game, they say this was a demo game. We needed to set the tone with the physicality that he brings to the table. And that was something they talked about going into the week where, hey, that 2023 game, we got our ass kicked. They out-toughed us. They were more physical than us at the line of scrimmage. So to create those holes for him and to bring him in as a closer and say, go win this game for us, go make some plays for us, I thought was huge. He set the tone for them all night long, and they were able to escape with the win, get it done.
Yeah, pretty incredible that a demo game can only include 12 carries for demo, right, and he still peels off 150 yards, a career high. He still rips off that 72-yard run as part of the 96-yard drive. He didn't touch the ball all that often, but he still left a huge imprint on that game, which is what he does when he gets rolling. I'll just flip to the offensive line, which I know I spoke about, off the top of last week's show, and obviously a bounce back for them. But the test still to pass was, okay, do that against a better defense, and more importantly, do it on the road after they succumbed to all that crowd noise in Green Bay and looked overwhelmed and looked frantic and looked confused. We needed to see them take the performance from last week in the comfortable confines of Ford Field and translate it or repeat it in a much more hostile setting. And they did it again. They did it in flying colors, and the communication was smooth all night long. Never felt like they were scrambling. Rare, if any, miscommunications. Obviously the run blocking speaks for itself. Penei Sewell is almost lost in this conversation because there's so much focus on Tate Ratledge and Christian Mahogany and even Graham for good reason. was a freaking hammer. Penei Sewell was a hammer all night long, and we probably take it for granted, but on every single positive run play, he was stealing someone's soul on the Ravens defense. The front line or in the second level. I mean, go to Montgomery's 72-yard run. It was Sewell stonewalling Roquan Smith, as along with everyone else winning their blocks on that play. But I just wanted to mention him because it feels like we sometimes are numb to his dominance. He was insane. And then Graham was also solid again for the second week in a row. And I think when he plays soundly and cleanly, it just helps stabilize the two. I call them rookies. I know Mahogany isn't, but the two essentially rookies on either side of him. Not to take away anything from them, but certainly their uptick owes at least in part to Graham's stabilizing presence. And then, dude, the pass protection again was pretty darn good. Maybe not quite as dominant as it was against the Bears, but no sacks of Jared Goff for the second week in a row, which, by the way, only happened twice the past three seasons when we all agreed the Lions had one of, if not the best offensive line in football. And like, I don't want to get ahead of ourselves. And again, it's another new test this week against a loaded defensive front. But if they make it three games in a row, keeping the sack column clean, that's the first time the Lions have done that, at least this century. I haven't even gone back to look farther, but that hasn't happened since the turn of the millennium and probably deeper into the 90s than that. So I came away thoroughly impressed by the offensive line to thrive in a setting against a defense like that, even one missing Kyle Van Noy.
I think it's really interesting to, you know, obviously the offensive line always gets the credit when the run game's going like that. But we know well before this year, and certainly I think even more this year, it's an all 11 thing, right? And these receivers are blocking at a different level right now. And Sam Laporta, I think, isn't getting enough attention for his blocking. And it's something I brought up today with John Morton. Misheard me at first, thought I was criticizing Sam Laporta.
He was about to jump down your neck.
Yeah, it was a weird moment, but
he was right.
You go back to that 72-yard run where, as Will so eloquently put, Sewell was stealing Roquan Smith's soul, and the only reason he was able to climb to the second level is they asked Sam Laporta to block a 265-pound defensive end on his own, and that's a tough assignment. You know, that is a tough assignment for any tight end, and maybe the only one I would trust in the league is George Kittle to do that regularly, and Laporta not only held up, but really dominated the matchup through the entire rep. And you can't have that run. You can't have that success without Laporta setting the tone at the line of scrimmage. And then on top of that, if Khalif Raymond, all, what is he, 190 pounds? I don't even know. Swooping behind and digging out the best run-stopping safety in the league in Kyle Hamilton, a 225-pound beast at the safety spot. And you know, it's really an all 11 thing. And, you know, offensive line was great, but, you know, I don't think we could ignore those guys on the perimeter and the roles they're playing in this being the success that it is.
Yeah, J-Rod, since you brought it up, I just want to touch on that play briefly and Raymond's role in it in particular, because I caught up with him along with Dave in the locker room yesterday just to ask about the receiver blocking, but also about his assignment on that play specifically. And I just like was asking him, you know that's your job and you see Kyle Hamilton, who's 6'4 and has at least 40, maybe 50 pounds on you coming downhill, and you have to go make that block, like what's going through your head? And he kind of had the most pure response. He was like, if I don't make this block, this play doesn't go. He was like, you feel that. So there is no hesitation. Like, you have this obligation to your teammates, no matter how much this might hurt. And it does hurt. He said, like, you feel it then. And the next day you have to go stick this safety because your running back depends on it. And he was like, look, when the play's coming to your side, I'd rather be a catalyst of the play going 72 yards than be the issue as to why I got stopped in the backfield. And it just feels like across the board, these receivers and tight ends share that sentiment.
I think Ratledge put it best today, and maybe it's a really common sentiment, but offensive line creates good runs. Receivers and tight ends create great runs.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Demo, the thing I looked at the touches on the year, it's about 60-40 Jameer, and I'm talking receptions as well. Obviously, Jameer has a ton of receptions, so maybe that's, I mean, the week one game obviously influenced the touches. I think he had like 14 catches, whatever it was. But the touches in terms of just rushing the ball, a lot more even, I guess, going into the year than I think many fans would think. I think many fans just assume that you see Saquon have this massive year, you see Jameer come into the year or last year and have 1,400 yards rushing. And Demo obviously was banged up last year at the end of it. And this year, people, I think, expected that David Montgomery would still be a part of the offense. But people don't acknowledge what he looked like in training camp. And you guys know this more than I do. He looks in the best shape of his career. He looks quicker, more agile. I mean, he was showing the agility off against the Ravens. There's a couple times where you're looking at him like, this guy looks quicker than he ever has looked. And Jared Goff just said, he's known about David Montgomery back in his days playing against him.
Yeah.
He was one of the best backs. He's that's never changed for David. So I think now people are understanding, if they don't already, that you have two great backs. And as great as Jameer is, ideally that's a player that you want to continue to keep healthy. And when you have a guy like David Montgomery, and we talked about this last week, you know, when they people were bringing up, they should start with David to wear down defenses. But I think Justin, you brought up too, and then Will, you brought up last year, the Rams game where they went to David in overtime. It's sometimes it's not a bad idea to have your more physical back close a game.
Yeah.
And then you see this game against the Ravens, 12 touches, the game he had. I think now people should know that this backfield, you have two great backs, as great as Jameer and all the money he's going to make in his career. Like, don't forget about David Montgomery, man. You know, he's my favorite back to draft in fantasy. I get this dude in like the sixth round
every year. Every year, it's like that.
No one knows that he gets a touchdown a game, and he's going to get just as many touches as Jameer Gibbs. So,
bro, Demo would say, "Nah, forget about me. Forget about me."
Yeah,
like, he thrives off stuff like that.
I think what I love about Montgomery, you know, obviously he doesn't have Gibbs's jets, right? Like, he got caught on that touchdown. That's the one maybe weakness in his game, but he's as elusive as any back in a phone booth in the league. You know, just he makes guys miss in these tight, confined places. And look at the cuts that he made on that 72-yarder with the little wiggle as he came through the hole, and then just reading Sewell's block and making that cut back there that was instrumental in making the play click fully. It's just he has a wonderful skill set. He can receive, he can pass block, he can do it all. He just doesn't have 4.4 speed. And look, you have the 4.4 speed guy, but I think in terms of being a complete back, Montgomery might be better than Gibbs, as weird as that sounds.
Oh, put it in the headlines. Put it in the headlines.
Clip it.
There's a link of this week's show.
Yeah. And that is YouTube, my friend. That's 6 seconds.
Hear that, Mustafa?
Yeah, Mustafa. Get on that, Mustafa. Yeah, you know, it's funny. I know, like, we have this comment here. Montgomery's a power back. Like, that's the thing people would – I think the misconception is he's actually – He is a power running back, but he's not really like a power. He's agile too. I mean, he might not have the 4.4 speed, but he can run to the outside. He can run in between the tackles. He's a physical back, but he's also a hard back to tackle because he's so big. But he's also, you know, he's got a little bit of speed to him, a little shifty, like MMC Fru will put in there. So he's very well rounded, to Justin's point. I think more well rounded than I think many Lions fans should know this, but I think nationally people are like, oh, he's just a power back. No, he's not, actually. Yeah. He can catch the ball out of the backfield. He's more complete than people give him credit for, I'll say that.
Was it like really 39 of 42 targets he caught last year? Something absurd crazy. Like that. Yeah.
The fact that you can just dump it down to him, and they don't do it enough, I don't think. But the fact you can just dump it down to him, we saw in that Seahawks game where he's just like trucking Devin Witherspoon and just keeps running. You could do that more often if you want to, because he's shown that he can catch out of the backfield. He can run with the power. He's got great vision, great footwork, makes guys miss in space. Like, he can do everything Jameer Gibbs can do except the long speed and the breakaway stuff to score on a run like that. That's about it. And, you know, Jameer maybe isn't as powerful, but when you watch him sometimes, he's always chugging his feet and keeping his balance. His contact balance is some of the best in the NFL for a back his size. So when you look at their games and you line them up side by side, they're pretty comparable. I know it doesn't always look that way because they're built differently, but when you watch their games and just what the Lions do with each of them in different ways, like, there's a lot of crossover there for sure. And it's something we've talked about on the show, but I think a game like that kind of emphasizes it for you a little bit more.
Yeah, if you slow down
Demo's runs, I think you'd be really impressed by how nimble he is. Like, just watch his feet. There's that the creases in the NFL, aside from maybe three or four times a game, are really, really narrow. And even when you slow it down, you're talking about slivers of space that these backs generally have to exploit. And if you watch Demo, especially in this last game, he had a couple runs backed up on the 98-yard drive near the Lions goal line where there were small creases, and he had to like jump cut over an offensive lineman's leg to find the hole and to gain 7-8 yards. And it just kind of puts you back into training camp and watching them go through all these drills every single day to fine tune and hone their footwork. And, you know, if your feet are misaligned or your jump cut's just a little bit off, like that 8-yard run could be a 2-yard loss or could be wiped out for no gain. So I'm glad that we're shining a light on how agile he is, how nimble he is, because that's as much a part of his game as anything. He kind of resists the power back label because it puts him in a very one-dimensional box. He's obviously worth more than that.
They talked about it on the St. Brown Brothers podcast when he joined. Like him and Jameer, there's plays. They both are just running. It's similar plays. It's not like with Ben Johnson where they had designated plays for each back. It's just all kind of combined. They're running each other's plays. And I'll also mention, if you want to keep giving shine to players, I thoroughly believe, now that we're three games in, and I don't see this player slowing down at any time, I think when you talk about quarterback and wide receiver duo, I don't think there's anyone playing at the level of Jared Goff and Amon-Ra St. Brown. I think they're the best quarterback wide receiver duo in the NFL. You have the Matthews and the Pukas, Joe when healthy and the Jamars. Like there's other guys, you know, you can keep bringing up, obviously it'd be a tight end, but still like Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce, but at the level they're playing at now, the last two games, you have incredible touchdown catches. And I think the moments are important. Like that fourth down throw to Amon-Ra St. Brown, just an absolute, I mean, it's just Dan. I mean, no surprise, just big balls play, man. I mean, the guy's just incredible, but the throw and the catch, of course, but just an absolute dot. You had the Bears game dot, touchdown dot. And then you had the touchdown that, you know, St. Brown, you know, very vocal about what he does in this league. But you know what? I love that about St. Brown, but that a dot. So I got to give shine to that too. I think just the connection they've shown over the last couple of years, Amon-Ra's first in catches. He's up there in yards, up there in touchdowns. He's playing at an insanely high level. I think he needs to be in that top 3 to 4 wide receiver conversation. And Jared Goff's, I mean, they've been praising him all week as well. I don't think there's really anyone playing at the level those two are playing at together right now.
I think it's Puka and Stafford is the one most consistent challenger. And I was just looking up the numbers. So 25 targets for St. Brown, 20 catches. It's very similar for Puka. 35. He's actually more volume, 35 targets, 29 catches. He's leading the league in yardage right now. You know, that's a great chemistry combination. And Stafford's always done that. He's, you know, really had a great chemistry with his number one target, whether it was Calvin or Cup. It's just something he does really well. But I love that fourth down play because as St. Brown detailed today, it was kind of screwed up.
Yeah.
Raymond got cramps. Tesla came in, had no idea what he was doing. They were kind of scrambling to figure it out. Tesla and St. Brown actually collided at the beginning of that snap, causing St. Brown to block the wrong player or fake block the wrong player. Like it was kind of a train wreck. And for Goff to salvage that with such a perfect throw, I think really highlights your point on just how much the chemistry, how much they're on the same page, that even when it's not right, Campbell says all the time, if you get on the same page and you make it right, it's okay.
Yeah, Ben Johnson called when he was here those players erasers. He used to talk about Jameer and Jamo as erasers often. You know, when there are breakdowns elsewhere in the play, sometimes talent can overcome it. And that's exactly what happened on that fourth down play. Talent and rapport between quarterback and receiver. I went to ask Tesla about that after St. Brown divulged it because, you know, I think most of us have spent the past couple of days just celebrating this perfectly, exquisitely called, executed fourth down play. And it seemed like they got exactly what they wanted. And, you know, they had deceived the Ravens by running a pass play out of a formation that they had run out of almost the entire game. And frequently St. Brown was blocking that safety, so it would make sense that they would think he'd be blocking him again. And they bite on the play fake and he leaks out. And so I asked him, like, is this how you all you know, thought it would play out. And that's when he revealed, actually, we kind of messed it up. So I went to get kind of Tesla's perspective on things. And I just kind of, I want to read to you his own summary of the play, because I can't do it justice myself. But this is what he said. He says, I knew where I was supposed to line up. I knew that much. I knew the play. I knew the concept. I knew Saint was diving in and running the block, and then J-Mo was going to come across. So we got to the huddle, and he was like, yo, Saint, what do I have? And he's like, bro, I don't know. Go ask Leaf. So I'm looking for Leaf. Leaf's not out there. I'm like, yo, J-Mo, you know what I have? He's like, nah, bro. So we're in the huddle, and we're in the huddle about to call the play, and Jared's like, just go. You got to block 1-2, then go to the flat. Block 1-2, as in like whichever of those defenders is 1-2 in our progression, you got to block one of those two and then go to the flat. And then Saint looked at Tesla and was like, yo, get ready. The ball's coming to you. And Tesla goes, oh shit. So I get lined up. I try to block down 1-2, but Hamilton, as you pointed out, J-Rod, triggered, I think, more quickly than either St. Brown or Tesla was ready for. So he actually broke through both of their blocks, and it was Demo who kind of had to come through after the play fake and pick up Hamilton. Tesla was not open in the least, did not even run his route to the sticks. Like, he was covered if the ball was coming his way. So he said when he saw the ball in the air going towards St. Brown, he was like, oh, thank goodness. And it did work out perfectly, but it's a great illustration of the trustworthiness that exists between Jared and Amon-Ra, because without that play that we're all crowning John Morton for probably would have fallen flat on its face.
This is why we love football, right? It's like, think about think about the like scenarios at play on a play like this. You know, that was a crucial fourth down call. As we know, national media doesn't love it when Dan Campbell goes for it on fourth down with the game on the line, because when it backfires, he never hears the end of it. So think about a play that screws up right then and there. Ravens get the ball back. Let's say they score. They do something like that. Could have been a disaster, right? And the fact that it happened on broken play like this, and we're all saying, man, the way they sequenced that and they set it up, the first quarter looks, and these sort of runs out of this formation, they came back from the fourth quarter. That's just brilliant, brilliant stuff. And then you hear about stuff like this. That's why I love football so much, because sometimes they just like, I mean, it worked out. And here we are talking about it. I think it really comes back to their chemistry. And Jared, I mean, what a bucket that he dropped that into. That was a great pass. The trust that he has in St. Brown to go get that. There was really no hesitation after the ball was snapped. You knew where that was going. You knew that they were going to go for it. I think I've turned over to Ben Raven sitting next to me in the press box on third down. It was like third and five. I was like, so when this fourth and two comes up, who are they going to? And it actually ended up being 3 yards they got to set up fourth and two right then and there. Yeah. We're like Saint. And then we saw what happened there. So, yeah, man, these guys, I'm trying to think of, you know, those duos that have better chemistry. And I think even with Puka, obviously they got Davante Adams over there now, but like the Lions still have way more weapons on this offense. And the fact that Jared is still consistently going to Saint and Saint's coming through, I think that almost speaks a little bit more volumes about their relationship, because he can go to any of these guys, Laporta, Gibbs, J-Mo, and he's always going to Saint in those crucial moments. And everyone in the building knows where the ball is going, except for some of these guys on offense, apparently. But everyone else knows, and they're coming through, and they're getting the job done time after time. So it's really impressive, the chemistry they have.
Yeah, he's doing it against some of the best DBs in the league. I mean, Marlon Humphrey did not – you would have thought watching that game, you're like, this guy's washed. He was one of the highest-graded corners last year. Like, I think that was more just Saint. Like, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. I mean, and then last game against Jalen Johnson, I mean, before he obviously went down, but still, he's doing it against, like, great corners. And I think for just the offense, I mean, they've scored 90 points the last two games. The defense, you kind of talked about it earlier. And I mean, we definitely should talk about not just the 7 sacks, but Al-Qaeda Muhammad in the post-game speech he had. I mean, he had 2.5 sacks. I mean, if you look at the don't look at ESPN. He's like third in the league in sacks for all the people wondering about Za'Darius Smith, including myself. You got him at home. I mean, this guy's up there in sacks so far through 3 games. I would even say, guys, I mean, really 2.5 games, because the Packers game, he played some snaps. He played a good amount, but he upped it against the Bears, got a sack, and then he played a lot of snaps. Obviously, no Davenport against the Ravens. Got 2.5 sacks, tackle for loss. He was living back there in the backfield, making just disrupting plays. And Aiden, of course, is starting to come around. I think the Hutch rule is now coming into fruition a little bit. Now we can start to see Hutch getting sacks. What have you guys kind of made of this defensive line play? I know someone in the chat asked about Aleem McNeil. They still don't have Aleem McNeil for, you know, for a couple of games or so, whatever the official timeline will be eventually. But what did you guys think of AQM and the massive game he had? And he said it himself. I was on the couch last year, and he's already on pace to have a career year in a Detroit Lions uniform. I've seen Bears fans, by the way, commenting on all these, like, AQM praise posts. Like, Ryan Poles, what, this guy was in Chicago and didn't do anything, and then he's in Detroit shining. It's like, well, that's what happens when you have the organization the Lions have kind of turned into and the coaching staff. I mean, you're getting the most out of these players, so it's credit to them as well.
This is clearly the former Bears collective today. That's what we're doing, Montgomery and AQM.
Yeah,
and Ben Johnson.
I went up to Muhammad in the locker room yesterday, and he's a fairly reserved dude, a little tough to crack in some of the interviews. And so I thought I would try a different approach. And I was like, you know, man, I just want to say thank you. And he's like, oh, what about? And I go, you're making me look so effing smart right now. I was like, I spent the entire off season, like, buttering up the idea that, like, this guy's legit and dropping this stat that I've repeatedly hit on, that his pass rush pressure rate was just a shade below Za'Darius Smith. And so, you know, I put a disclaimer on that. We don't know what it looks like in a bigger workload, but it was not like he was playing 10, 12 snaps a game. It was 30, 40 snaps a game last year in several of those games. And so I had every reason to believe that it would port. And I'm not gonna lie, I didn't think it was gonna be this good, but he's playing out of his mind right now. And it's a really nice skill set combination. He rushes with power, he's got enough bend and you know, tremendous amount of motor, hustle, whatever you want to call it, grit, you know, if that fits your Detroit vernacular. And it works really, really well opposite Hutch. What he doesn't have that you lost or have temporarily lost with Devonport is, you know, Muhammad's not the best run defender. He's not as stout setting an edge, but you know, they're working around that. But in terms of pass rush, he is giving them everything they needed and more.
Yeah, he has. And Justin, you were on that early, so I'll give you your credit here. I'll give you your flowers.
Makes Muhammad up for our Arnold miss.
for now, I'm not off. Yeah, I will say, when you watch that game against the Ravens, I thought it was such, the structure of the defense was perfect. You know, we'll get to the spies in a little bit, I'm sure. But Muhammad's job was pretty easy in that one, because when you have one guy in Hutchinson who's getting, you know, doubled and chipped basically every play, and then you have linebackers that are blitzing, or at least as a spy, you know, kind of watching Lamar, you just have to wait for something to happen. And not to say that Al-Quadin wasn't, you know, producing out there, because he was. But a lot of times it's like, hey, go win a one-on-one. That's like what they've talked about all summer. It's like, we have guys that can win those one-on-one rushes, and they just have to go out and do it. We know that they're capable of it. We just have to see it. We did not see it in week one against the Packers. Packers, to their credit, had a good game plan. They have a good offensive line over there, I would say. So, I mean, we just need these guys to execute the way that Dan Campbell and these guys know they can execute. And he said it pretty much every opportunity he's gotten, whether it's been in training camp, during the regular season, on 97.1, like, hey, we like our guys. Like, you can keep asking me this question all you want, but we feel like we have guys that can produce when the moment arrives. And what a moment for that to happen. On Monday Night Football, you're 1-1. If you drop that game, you're 1-2. People say you can't beat good teams. Like, I'm sure all those narratives would have been floating out there. And it's coming on the heels of Marcus Davenport landing on IR. So imagine if they didn't produce the way they produced in that game. Like, there would have been a lot of national talk about whether they have enough. And so for him to step up the way that he did, and to get those, you know, some cleanup sacks, but also him winning those rushes with regularity. I think he's fourth in the NFL right now in defensive splash play rate, which is funny because I think Myles Garrett is right after him at fifth. And Will Anderson Jr., who's playing out of his mind, is third in the NFL right now. So that, again, you know, not the largest sample size, but he's doing exactly what they need him to do. And he's going out there and producing for them. And that's all they can ask for.
We like our guys, by the way, is what Campbell meant when he said we're good in the quote that has been entirely misconstrued by like 95% of this Lions fan base as some kind of slight to Za'Darius Smith. He was endorsing the guys they have on the roster after having been asked about Za'Darius, and so it was framed as a dismissal of Za'Darius Smith. Let's just be clear, it wasn't that. I feel compelled to try and squat down this like viral quote that has taken on its own life form. I mean, I know I talked a lot about AQM last week, so I'll let you guys have your say on him here. I thought as part of this defensive game plan, Derek Barnes was crucial. I thought this was as well as we've seen Barnes play in a single game in his Lions tenure. I thought he was playing pretty close to this level before he was hurt last year. It felt like he was stepping into the role in the Lions defense that Kelvin Shepard is putting on him now, where he's not just an off-ball linebacker or an on-ball linebacker. He's even playing a little bit in the slot as a big nickel at times. But he was obviously one of those spies they used against Lamar, and his sack was a great illustration of the value in spying. I think on his sack, it was both he and Anzalone who had both drop back into coverage as spies on Lamar. And once that pocket collapsed and the coverage held up in the back end, Anzalone and Barnes just surged into action. And it was a shoestring tackle that Barnes made on Lamar that probably saved a first down scramble and forced the Ravens to kick a field goal. You know, we heard Kelvin Shepard today endorse Barnes in a way that at least he hadn't told us before. You know, when he took this deep coordinator job, sounds like one of the first things he told Brad Holmes, as he told us, was I have to have that player. And, you know, I need Derek Barnes as part of this defense. And while the numbers last year might not have reflected it in the 2.5 games that he played, the Lions felt pretty confident that he was mastering multiple roles within this defense. And all of those roles were on display on Monday night. And, you know, I was asking Derek about it today, you know, what does that mean to you when you hear the coordinator go to the GM and say, I need this player. And he was like, I just got to prove him right. I have to prove him right. And it feels like with each game, he's beginning to do that. The other thing I want to touch on with the pass rush is that the coverage really was great in the second half. And I know one corner in particular came under fire, a lot of fire in the first half for good reason. The other corner was terrific all game long. TJ Reed had a really difficult assignment on Boston College product Zay Flowers, but you know, they assigned him that task last week, and they asked him, you know, you got to take Zay Flowers out of this game, and that is exactly what DJ Reed did. And Zay Flowers, like as DJ Reed told me yesterday, is the entire engine to their passing attack. They use him like really in every way imaginable. You know, he's the explosive weapon. He's the drive starting weapon. He's their screen weapon. So when he was watching film, like it was a lot to process and to prepare for. But you know, we measure defensive backs, I think sometimes too frequently based on passes defended and interceptions. The passes that don't come your way are maybe even more telling than those that do. And when you look at Zay Flowers' performance on Monday night, I think he only had 3 targets. And I think only 1 or 2 of those came with DJ Reed on him. And that is a testament more than anything else to how well he was covered by DJ Reed. And just one more point on this, DJ Reed gave a lot of credit to Dom Lovett, who played the role of Zay Flowers on the scout team offense last week. And, you know, Zay Flowers and Dom Lovett, similar skill set, similar body types. And Dom Lovett even said today, like, he spent some time watching Zay Flowers' film last week to try and give DJ Reed the best possible look that he could in practice. And when he went out and watched Reed eliminate Flowers on Monday night, Lovett was like, oh, hell yeah. I did that. But, you know, the 7 sacks, 6 of which I believe came in the second half, owed as much to the secondary holding up as it did to the front 7.
I think it's you know, interesting, and I don't think there's any sugarcoating it. Arnold has had his struggles this year, but when you look at the end of game stats, 5 targets, 3 receptions, 58 yards, and 44 of those yards, I think, came on back-to-back plays. Both of them were not great. It was a 3rd down completion he gave up where he lost his man, and then, you know, a pretty bad loss for 34 yards, but you know, that's just life of a corner. And I always think back to a conference call with Bruce Arians, I don't know, a decade ago, where he was talking about offensive tackle play, And he's like, look, you can block your man 67 times in a game, and then you give up two sacks. You suck. You suck. And it's the same way with corners. Like, they're so on an island, more so on an island, really, that if you give up two receptions, a third down completion and a long pass, and you do your job the rest of the game, you suck. Like, that's just how you're treated. And it's not necessarily fair. And again, like, Arnold has struggled this year. There's no doubt about it. And he struggled there, but I thought he showed a little bit of moxie with the way he, rebounded there in the second half. And you talk about throws not coming your way. He took away a couple throws that Lamar wanted to make, contributing to some of the pass rushes with sacks.
Yeah, well, someone commented, I wanted to bring it up, Cody Williamson. He says, DC's comments on TA and Amik have led to a lot of fans to speculate that Amik could get time outside, which he did. They clarified today, so we clarify that. Do you guys think that's feasible? Could TA benefit from moving inside? You guys can speak on that. Because, yeah, they clarified what they – I think people, when they heard the quote, people just assumed the guy was getting benched, which I don't know why that would even be the first thought people have on their mind. But Kelvin clarified that pretty quickly today.
Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead, Cole.
Yeah, I didn't really see that as like them switching positions. Yeah. I think it's just about, the Lions' base defense has become sort of a three linebacker look with Derek Barnes on the field more so than the nickel packages they've been so used to, I guess, when AG was here. And I looked it up, just their 4-3 rates over the last three seasons specifically. And I know it's small sample size this year, but 2023, they had three linebackers on the field 28% of the time. 2024, they had three linebackers on the field 38.7% of the time, and that's with Barnes injured as well. And so far this year, three games in, that's up to 58.8% of the time. So it's more than doubled in the last 2 years alone. And that shows, how they feel about Derek Barnes, but also they really like Amik Robertson. And it's like, he can play on the outside. That's where he mostly played before he got to Detroit, and they like him in the slot and nickel, but if Terrion could get a break here and there, and he's playing a lot of snaps and he's asked to do a ton in man coverage, and I know they're playing a little bit less man than they normally do, but he's still playing a lot of snaps out there. And if he gets turned around a couple times, and you can get him like sort of a mental reset just here and there, just pick your spots, I think that's something the staff can probably manage pretty well. And then you get Amik out there to kind of fill in the gaps, and maybe you like a certain matchup with him on the outside versus him on the inside. I think that's what you're trying to do, just to get Amik more playing time. And that seems like to be the message out there. That was my read. But again, they're leaning on that three linebacker look pretty heavily. And especially in a game like this, where you're going to have spies on the field. So I'm curious to see what that looks like going forward. But that was kind of my read on the situation.
In the games that Derek Barnes has started where Robertson has been here. So we're talking about a 6-game sample size now. Amik has played more than 50% of the snaps just once, and that was the Green Bay game to start the season. And so, it's just kind of the way the personnel goes. And I don't think they had a whole lot of trust or faith in Amik to start last season. That relationship hadn't forged yet. And, maybe he is a player that benefited from Barnes' injury more than anybody, as weird as it sounds, just because of the way they shuffle the deck. But similarly, he gained even more trust from the coaching staff when Carlton Davis went down and he had to move to the outside. And I think for his entire career, Amik Robertson's been a better player on the outside. He proved last year he was a better nickel than he ever was in Vegas, but overall in his career, he's a better player on the outside. And so I don't know how much, he's going to eat into Terrion's playing time. Maybe it's just a series of half or something, but I think about when Barnes was a young player and the Lions tried to thrust him out there kind of early, and he ate it, and he had to have his role dialed back and had to be rebuilt up. Or if you want to go for a specific position, Darius Slay was benched multiple times early in his career and had to be built back up. And I didn't fact check how old Terrion Arnold is, but Calvin Shepard pointed out today he's young. He's 22, 23 years old. Okay, 22 years old, like he's going through developmental growing pains, and this dial back, whatever it is, whether it's taking 10 snaps off his plate or taking half of his snaps off the plate, should help him in the long run. It should help him get right mentally, which will help him get right physically.
Yeah, you know, Amik is a playmaker, man, and this defense wants as many playmakers on the field as possible at one time. And, you know, I think it behooves them to get him on the field. You know, that I think Shepard said it best. Like, he's earned his keep here. Like, I owe it to this guy to get him on the field, because he has a nose for the football. I mean, you saw the two punch outs last year in that Titans game that actually Hutchinson credited for his own punch out on Monday night. And he has this feistiness on the outside that I think Terrion could afford to add a little bit more of in some of his matchups. Not the handsiness, but the feistiness, the tenacity. And he deserves the reps that he has lost because of how much they've played base, and because of, I think it was Jim O'Neill explaining this last week, they can stay in base so frequently because Branch can come down and play man in the slot. You know, when offenses roll out 11 personnel and there's three receivers out there, Branch's versatility also in a way cuts into Amik's playing time, but he's too good to keep on the sidelines. And if you watch him on the sidelines on drives where he hasn't been in for three or four or five plays, like, he just gets antsy, dude. He gets a little jittery. Like, he wants to be in there. I was asking him about that today, and he was like, yeah, man, like, I'm a competitor. Like, I got to be out there. And that's the kind of infectious energy that this defense and this team in particular places a premium on, and that will rub off on everyone else around him. And I agree, Justin. You know, look at his matchup last year against Justin Jefferson in the season finale. He was all over him all night long, and he's definitely earned the right to be out there more often. With Terrion, you know, we all saw what we saw, and it was validated, I think, today when Shep said, we got to get him back to playing like he was in camp, when he was frequently winning his one-on-one matchups against St. Brown and against Jamison Williams. And that's what led Shep to say, you know, what I think it was in August, he's looking like a CB1 that can go and travel with people, because those are the kind of receivers that CB1s have to play against. And that was real. That growth was happening before our eyes. And, you know, it felt even more substantial to me because both the coaching staff and Terrion himself had placed such a premium on the mental side of the game. And like, Terrion devoted 4 hours every single day this offseason to studying film. He converted an office in his grandparents' house in Florida into like his personal film room. And then he comes back and you just see him playing with more anticipation and reading the stems of routes, and you're like, yeah, this is real. This is going to translate. And it's been a little bit troubling to see that it hasn't. And you know, you watch the separation that some of these receivers create on him, like especially the deep ball to, was it Devontae Walker? Is that the one that went down towards the sideline, like the deep corner route?
Yep.
And as Walker is coming out of his break, Terrion like sloughed off almost as he was trying to track with him and gave him even more space. And that's where you'd like to see, and I'm sure he'd like to see some more of that film study show up, like reading the stem, reading the release and reading the break and knowing exactly where he's going. And it just seemed like he was always a step or two behind Monday night. But I agree, this is such a young player so early in his career that you have to have faith that it will get turned around eventually.
One thing I think people forget about Terrion is that he was benched at Alabama, you know, for not performing well. I think Eli Ricks, I want to say, was the guy that got the nod over him at one point. And Terrion had to go and fight and win his job back just to get himself drafted where he was drafted. And I thought that showed, you know, the sort of perseverance, the mentality to kind of push through that the Lions loved. I'm sure they love that story. Hey, a guy, you know, you get passed up on the depth chart, you got to go back and fight for your job and win it at a place like Alabama, coaching, having Nick Saban coach you. Like, that's not an easy thing. I'm sure he's getting grilled behind the scenes, and we need to see more from you, man. Like, you have the talent. And so for him to get there eventually showed you what kind of mindset he has. And, you know, look, we all see it in training camp. Like, that we, people are like, oh, why were you guys lying to us? That's not what happened. Like, we were seeing with our own eyes. Coach, you saw it. he looked like he's on his way to becoming a dude in training camp. But this is a position where, hey, you get beat sometimes and you start overthinking a little bit. Like, that's natural, I think. And I wouldn't even say it's him getting beat regularly in man coverage. When you look at, you know, when he's given up some catches, he's almost right there. That's just like a little bit, maybe doesn't have the help on the back end he thought he had. Sometimes gets turned around in zone when they do that. I think there's a couple plays like that on Monday night. But when I watch him, I see a guy that, you know, probably needs a little bit of mental reset. And I think this line staff is so good at kind of realizing what guys need, how they need to be coached up, if they need tough love, if they need to be loved on a little bit. And so this seems like one of those moments where, you know, Shep said it himself, like, we still believe in this young player, but he's developing in real time. And, you know, maybe there's some expectations for year two, but if he's not ready for that just yet, then sure. The fact that you have a guy like Amik that you can lean on in the meantime while he figures it out, that's a perfect situation. That's why you have a guy like Amik here. So I'm not giving up on that kid yet. I think he's got a ton of talent. I think he showed at Alabama why he was a first round pick. I don't think that just disappeared. I think he showed at times last year that he can perform in man coverage the way they want him to. It's just last year was penalties. It's about continuing to know what they're trying to do, how they're trying to attack you. And so, look, a guy like Lamar Jackson is going to make some plays on you. And when you play this much man coverage, you have to know, I'm going to get beat, but I got to bounce back. And so I think they're working on that with him behind the scenes, I imagine. But I think it's too early to give up on him. He's three games into his second year playing one of the toughest positions in the NFL, being asked to do a ton. So I would say give him some grace. But in the meantime, if me can help you out, you know, that's a really good setup to have.
You buried the lead a little bit there, Colton, on that benching. He called that his Michael Jordan moment.
His Michael Jordan moment, yeah.
Of course he did. Like, look, you know, sometimes that he cites that as very, very motivating. And sometimes, like you hit on, right, like these coaches know how to find and tap into those things. And this might end up being that, even if it's only a fraction of the playing time he's losing. But I do wonder, and we constantly say it, I constantly say it, right? Like, the kid does not lack confidence. Even when things are going poorly, the confidence is sky high. But I'm starting to wonder how much of that is just personality and projection, and whether the confidence, the real confidence is there, or that is what needs to be reset and brought to the confidence that he is projecting into the world. It's almost like he's faking it until he makes it.
I think the coaching staff knows he needs to be loved on a little bit here, especially in a week where Campbell publicly comments that, you know, they're going to give Amik some chances on the outside at Terrion's expense. And I don't think it was any mistake that Shep told us today that when he broke down his defense the day after that Ravens game, one of the first things he told them was, I know everyone wants to point the finger at Terrion, but the reason that we shut down the run is because for most of that game, he was playing with no help behind him. So just like all you guys remember that, you guys in the front seven, the D-line, you're all having a blast in the box. Just think about what it would be like to be back there with no help. And, you know, our run success is partly owed to his willingness, at least, maybe not the ability on Monday, at least in the first half, but his willingness to play back there without any help. So I sense this coaching staff trying to strike an uplifting tone this week with Terrion, while knowing that he's probably going to see a reduced role on Sunday.
So before we get to our dog and pony picks for,
hey, what are you drinking, by the way, J-Raj?
Got myself a little
ooh,
cheetah blood.
Ooh. Dog and pony.
Ooh. Yeah. You know, it's fun when you have a sponsor that you actually like.
Yeah.
We popped in there. I know we talked about it after.
We like Sleeper too, just for the record.
Yeah, yeah. But like, I like beer and I like dogs. And they're into disc golf there. Like, it's just hitting all the things. It's great. It's great.
Yeah, we know the proud sponsor of the show, of course, Dog and Pony Show Brewery. We got our Dog and Pony picks coming up. But first, we got to hear from our friends over at Sleeper, another proud sponsor of the program. So here's a quick word from them, and then we'll be right back.
Sleeper is the number one fantasy sports app. It pays to know sports. Pick more or less on top players. Your first pick is on us, so start winning now. Play in Texas, Georgia, Minnesota, and 27 more states. Pick anytime across all sports, pregame or live. Over 10 million players are already on Sleeper. Make your picks count. Score up to 1,000 times your cash. Join today. Get up to $100 credit using code HMA. Call your shot on Sleeper. Download now.
Oh, I don't know why this is like this, but let me just get this all fixed. Hey. We are back. Let me tell you about our friends over at Sleeper, because Sleeper, a fantasy sports, which you guys should be using, of course, we're in the midst of fantasy season, and real money gaming app focused on bringing people together through sports and gaming. Sleeper's become one of the fastest organically growing fantasy platforms in the entire world, while earning some of the highest levels of engagement per user in the industry. At Sleeper, it's not just about sports. It's about building personal connections and lasting memories. They also have Sleeper Picks, which if you're in a state that allows it, you should be using it. It connects friends over picks. You just choose 2 to 8 of your favorite players from pregame, live, or even across different sports. Pick more or less than the predicted stats. And on Sleeper, you can get up to 1,000x payouts. Share with your friends. Get rewarded together. Use the code HMA. Get a $100 deposit match up to $100. So shout out to our friends over at Sleeper for sponsoring the show. Now it is time. Okay, here we go again. Let me just fix this. All right, we're good. We're good. We are back. Let me swap that. So all right. Time for our, honestly, the most, I guess, segment most people look forward to, I think. They have to. Dog and Pony Picks for Dog and a Pony Show Brewery, which you guys mentioned you went there last week. Had a blast. Fortunately, I could not go. I'm looking forward to checking it out. I love beer as well. Who doesn't? Oh, and they have great beer over at Dog and Pony Show Brewery. Lions, yeah, Browns. And I think this is the type of game where I have to mention the word, two words, trap game, which people will bring up the, you know, short week. It's the Browns. They just beat the Packers in a disgusting fashion. And I think it is fair. One of the best matchups to watch would be obviously that defensive line against an offensive line that's been playing great the last two games. But I think we're at a point now in this regime with Dan Campbell, and maybe this is just a little bit slappy. And if it is, that's fine. I don't care. I don't think the words trap game exists with this regime for some reason. I don't know why. Dan Campbell always has these guys ready to play, and it seems like most the games that most teams would look at as trap games, the Lions have the 48-hour rule, all right, and it's been working pretty dang well. What do you guys kind of foresee happening this weekend? Just a matchup against the Browns. Again, I know they're not the Ravens, but they have a very good defense led by former Lions head coach Jim Schwartz over there with Myles Garrett. But what do you guys make of this matchup this weekend?
I just think about all the times last year where they played opponents they're supposed to beat, and they just smashed them. I mean, Tennessee, Dallas, Jacksonville. I think they outscored them like 130-10. Like, it was just – I agree with you, Jeff. I don't think it's slappy at all. I think it's maybe one of the better qualities of Campbell and his staff, so many of them being former players, is they just have that ability to kind of, you know, get these guys up for every opponent. And I think it was Aiden Hutchinson saying this week, like, you can't sleep on any team in the NFL. Like, yeah, Everybody's got – talent. They will make a fool of you if you sleep on them. And if there was any hint of that, the fact that Green Bay, who was playing phenomenally through 2 weeks, stumbled last week is a wake-up call if you even needed it. I think still, even though we were all wrong last week and maybe all wrong in week one, we're not doing great on our picks. Hopefully nobody's using these for gambling purposes, but I think the Browns are going to have a hard time scoring on the Lions. I think that's going to be the problem. Obviously, the Browns have some defensive talent here that can slow the Lions down. Their run defense has been phenomenal, whether John Morton said they've seen a run game quite like this or not. But I've got probably, let's go 24-12. 12 is a real NFL score, right?
Yeah, that sounds right to me.
Yeah, failed Johnny, 2-point conversion.
Field goals. Yeah.
Johnny headlines over there, huh? I feel like he didn't realize what he had done when those words left his mouth. You know, he was just trying he was just trying to love on his own guys a little bit and point to how well they've run the ball now for 2 weeks. But man, you Google Lions Browns right now or John Morton, everything that pops up is just headlines. Browns have not seen a rushing attack like the Lions. You know, I'm with DJ Raj. I go back to that Titans game last season too, when, if you guys recall, Tennessee came into that game with this really highly ranked defense, and you know, they felt pretty good about a bunch of the pieces they had up front, and they even forced the Lions into a 3-and-out. that I think ended in a sack on the first drive. And you were like, whoa, are the Titans about to give this offense some trouble? And then the Lions scored 52 points, in part because the defense that day was feasting on the Titans offense. That was like a 4-turnover game. And I kind of see a similar script playing out on Sunday. You know, the Browns lost their starting left tackle last week, who was playing right tackle because right tackle Jack Conklin was banged up. Conklin might be back in there on Sunday, but if he is, he's probably not going to be at 100%. And so you look at that offensive line protecting maybe the only quarterback who's less mobile right now in the NFL than Jared Goff, and you see an opportunity for AQM and for Hutch and for the guys in the interior and for the linebackers on blitzes to defeat. And I think to rattle and to force Flacco into some mistakes, into some dumb throws, some bad throws. You know, this feels like a game where the secondary has all kinds of opportunities to come down with picks. And maybe in a very fitting way, in the game that Therrien is pseudo benched and in the week that everyone is giving up on him, maybe this is the week that he comes down with his first career NFL pick. And then he can point to all of us in the press box. But yeah, I think the Lions defense is going to have a field day on Sunday. And I think the offense will do what it needs to do, even against an obviously really, really good unit.
I think my mentions are still on fire from tweeting out the Morton quote earlier today from Brown's Twitter. They found it very quickly and I've been rolling with it all day. But I think when you look at what Morton says, I think it's fair to say they haven't faced a rushing attack like this. And I know it's easy to say Lamar Jackson and Derrick Henry, sure. When you look at that game that they played against the Ravens, they had 8 men in the box on 71.4% of those rush attempts. So they really sold out to stop the run. And they did, at least, you know, Derrick Henry, but Lamar Jackson still threw 4 touchdowns in that game. So, and they still gave up 41 points, 41, I believe, 40. Yeah. So when I look at this one, if they want to load the box like that, I'm sure the Lions will say, bring it on, because with the rate of man coverage that Jim Schwartz runs, I think it's 49.1% this year. I think Jared and these receivers could also have a tremendous day just torching them in man coverage if they want to load the box and spread it out on the outside there. So I'm curious how they're going to play this. Maybe they do a little bit less of, you know, those 8 man boxes, but I think it's sort of pick your poison when you're facing an offense like this. I think they've got too much talent to be shut down in one area. And if they are, they can easily turn to their passing game or get the screen game going a little bit more. I think they'll have answers to the test. So I think they'll have enough offensively. I think what scares you is that they can create pressure with 4 without having to blitz. And, you know, obviously Myles Garrett and Mason Graham's been playing great, yeah, the Michigan product. So that scares you a little bit. But I think, you know, in terms of what this Lions offense has, I think they have enough to get it done. I think this Browns offense is going to have trouble against this Lions defense. So in terms of a score for me, I think I'll go, let's go 27-13.
Bro, I was about to say that score. I had to put a score down during my preview, so I got to pick one. I was literally going to say 27-13. Okay. I will say 24-10. Lions roll, and I'm going to stick with Therrien's first career pick.
You know, this is you know what? You and Colton almost had the same score. Me and J-Raj almost had the same score. You said 24-12. I had 24-13. So maybe this is the right pick 'em, actually. Maybe you should put the entire Morton. No, I'm kidding. Don't put the Morton. Hey. But I'm just saying, it's all lining up. 24-13, I have the Lions winning. It's not 50 points, but I think it's enough for Jim Schwartz to chase Dan Campbell through the tunnel like he chased Jim Harbaugh afterwards. So I think it's going to be a great game. Appreciate all the support on the show there. Shout out to Dog and Pony Show Brewery, as always, for sponsoring the show. We will be back next Wednesday, of course, after this game. Continue to hit the like button, hit the subscribe button, tell a friend as always, and we will catch you guys next Wednesday. Until then, we'll catch you.
Peace.
We're good.